welcome back to Southern Fried Storytime, and I'm so excited to talk to you today because we're going to do something a little bit different. It has been almost exactly 3 years since I've lived down here in Charleston, so I thought, given a little more experience in sightseeing and traveling and stuff in the area, I thought I would update you on my top 10 things to do in the Charleston area, and I hope you enjoy it. Just kind of my semi-local adventures. Not all of them are right here in Charleston. Some of them are a little out of town, but never more than like 2 hours. Okay, so starting with number 10, the old Sheldon Church ruins. If you're a long-term listener of the show and you've seen the season on Greek mythology, I used photos from the old Sheldon Church ruins a lot for those episodes because it's this really cool old church ruin right in between Charleston and Beaufort, and it's really incredible. They use it now mostly for weddings and stuff like that to hold events at. The church had burned down, been rebuilt, and burned down again, like a lot of things down here, and it is really, really cool. Just the architecture, and then it's surrounded by this grove of Spanish moss-covered live oak trees, and it is absolutely beautiful. Do wear your mosquito repellent if you visit, though. It is, because of its really kind of cool, romantic location tucked away in the woods, it is super, super infested with mosquitoes. Little mosquito spray, and this will be one of the coolest places you ever, ever visit in your life. It is really, really awesome. Highly recommend it. And then since you're right there in between Charleston and Beaufort, you can have a quick hop to one or the other or both. You're not that far from Savannah. It's a great location as far as things that are within driving distance of it. Do be aware that there's not a ton to do around it, though, in like the immediate vicinity. I remember we were all really, really hot from traveling because we had gone down to, I think we had gone to Hilton Head that weekend. So we were on our way back to Charleston from Hilton Head, and it was so, so hot. So we did have to stop at a gas station to get something to drink because there was not a lot around the old Sheldon Church. But this breathtaking old church ruin is absolutely still one of the most gorgeous things I've seen since moving to the South. Number 9. Market Street. This one is right here in Charleston. It's as local as you could possibly be, and it's the city marketplace right down in Charleston. If you travel up East Bay Street, where East Bay Street meets Market Street, you are going to find the old city market, and it is just row after row of local crafts and local food, and it's really, really, really neat. The reason why it's so low on the list is because it's really not that active in the winter when our tourist season kind of calms right down. But spring, summer, and fall, this is the place to be if you want to get the most out of your Charleston trip. There are lots of local restaurants and shops right around it, lining that same street as well. And it's just an awesome kind of one-stop shop to get a great view of Charleston culture and what the local artists and artisans are up to. So definitely worth a stop over at Market Street. Number 8, the South Carolina Aquarium. This one is right here in Charleston, even though it says South Carolina Aquarium, and it is amazing. It is so much fun. It's like, I would almost say, if you'd been to Disney's The Living Seas in the 90s, it's that quality of aquarium experience. It's very, very clean, very airy, and it's more focused on kind of local wildlife like dolphins and stingrays, and a lot of focus on turtles. There's an injured sea turtle hospital right there where they bring in sea turtles from North and South Carolina, maybe even Georgia, and so you get to see these sea turtles in recovery, and it's absolutely fascinating. It's a great educational experience for kids because it's not one where they're going to have to like read a lot of plaques and displays and stuff. There's actually a lot of interactive education there, which makes it much better for kids because they're not just sitting there staring at a boring museum exhibit. They get to interact and play, and through that play they can actually learn. And it's fun to get to touch the stingrays and the sharks and the starfish and stuff like that. It's just really great. It's a wonderful experience. Definitely recommend South Carolina's Aquarium right here in Charleston. Spot number 7, the James Island County Park, with kind of a highlight around their Christmas lights, which start usually the end of November and go on until the beginning of January. Now, the James Island County Park as a whole is really, really incredible. They have awesome hiking trails put all through the park, and they have different levels of difficulty, but they're all pretty easy. If you're one of your advanced cross-country hikers, this might be a little bit easy-peasy for you, but for most people, this will be a challenge. It's more of a distance challenge rather than a climbing challenge, because there's not a lot of climbing to do on the hike, but if you're interested in climbing, there's also a rock wall to climb, there's a water park, there's a fishing pier, there's the biggest dog park I've ever been to, and your dogs can play and swim and enjoy other dogs. It's just an incredible park. You could easily spend all day there. There is a campground, so I'm sure people spend like a week or so there, and it's really awesome. The campground itself is really pretty, and just to enhance the experience around Christmas, they have that Christmas lights display. Now, the first year I was here, it was still during COVID, so you had to drive through the Christmas lights display, which was still pretty cool, but it's nothing compared to now when it's all open and you can actually walk through the Christmas lights display, and they light up the whole park with all different Christmas lights. And then at a couple points, there are like gift shops and hot chocolate stands and all kinds of neat little festive like bonfires that you can roast marshmallows and hot dogs over, and it's a really cool experience, and it takes a couple hours, but the Christmas lights at James Island County Park are absolutely unmissable. Anytime we have anybody visiting from out of state, when the lights are going, we know for sure that's what we want to do, because it's a really cool experience. It was really fun to take my grandmother along too, because every corner we'd go around there were more lights and she'd just get more and more excited. And my husband still talks about how fun it was to see her react to how beautiful all of these lights were. So definitely give that a check out if you're in the area. Number 6, Boone Hall. We had a great time at Boone Hall one day. We've only visited once, but it has a really beautiful like butterfly house with a koi pond. And of course there's the plantation house and the gardens, and there's a lot of kind of interactive history there. Most of these plantations have a garden with local fruit and vegetables that grow in it. And it's just really, really neat. It's a way to update yourself on some local history. And the inside of the house also is really, really cool. I love the libraries in these old houses, and Boone Hall's is probably the most impressive one I've seen so far. They were, you know, kind of small family libraries at the time, but just Boone Hall's was the one that was the most like, when I imagine these wealthy families having these incredible libraries back in these periods, Boone Hall's library is the way I picture it. And they of course have a gift shop and I think like a little mini restaurant or something, but to me, just getting to see the inside of the house and see the library is incredible. I love these old libraries. They're really, really cool. Number 5, Cypress Gardens. Cypress Gardens is so, so fun. In the winter, it might be a little more mild, but in the spring and fall, especially when the alligators are still awake, you can actually borrow a boat there at the Cypress Gardens, and they have a route charted out through their swamps, through the cypress swamps, and you get to row your little boat through the gardens. And in the spring and fall, the alligators would still be really, really active, so you're kind of paddling through when all of the alligators and the wildlife are there. Now in the winter, most of the wildlife down here is kind of hibernating, or at least a lot less social, so you don't see quite as much. But once you get past like the April and May time frame, where it's a little bit warmer but not blazing hot yet, you get to see a lot more wildlife, and it's absolutely gorgeous. They have awesome displays inside where you can get to know different wildlife, the different venomous snakes that live around here. It's good to kind of be up on that information when you're visiting, right? The garden is, of course, incredible. They have tons of gazebos that you can visit, and it's absolutely beautiful. The cypress trees themselves are fascinating and lovely. And of course, there is another butterfly garden at this particular place. And the butterflies are always so fun and sweet to visit. And there's a giant alligator that they keep kind of specifically within a fenced-in area. I don't know if he just doesn't get along with the other gators or what, but he is humongous. I mean, that's... I'm gonna be honest, that's a dragon, right? I mean, this guy is huge. So he's kind of cool to get to check out as well. And what really, really freaks me out about that alligator is he's probably close to 10 or 12 feet long. And yet there are times where I've walked by there and it's a pretty small fenced in area, but you don't see him at all. And I'm going, where on earth is something that big able to hide? Just saying, it's a little spooky, but also really incredible. Number 4, Palmetto Island Park. It's another one where you can hop in a little boat and go canoeing or kayaking around, which is something I love to do. So I like to cruise around and see all the plant and animal life, and you can do all of that at this park. It does also have an audio tour that you can visit different points in the park and learn more about the history of the area. And it's another big one, guys. Another huge park with lots to do. There are water parks inside of it. There's a nature preserve island where you can chase around all the tiny little fiddler crabs, and it's just a wonderful getaway over by Mount Pleasant, and it's absolutely gorgeous. And you can get far enough into nature that you can't hear any cars, and that's usually a pretty good sign of a good day out there. Number 3, Middleton Plantation. Middleton Plantation is just down the road from me, and it is gorgeous. Another pretty good library to check out in the old plantation house. And the gardens here are very manicured, very put together. It reminds me of, if you've ever stayed at Disney's Port Orleans Riverside, the gardens there are very, very similar to the ones at Middleton Place. They're just very ornately manicured and put together. My favorite part is the stockyard, the little yard where they have all of the different sheep and the horses and the geese, and I think there's still a pig, and it's really cool. And then they have different artisans, like a blacksmith and a basket maker and a soap maker and stuff like that, that work there at the store, at the stockyard. So it's kind of like a little mini colonial Williamsburg. It's like a little step back in time where you get to see people making these crafts that they would have done back in the day. One time we went there and they were doing a brick making demonstration, and that was very, very cool, on how they used to make bricks back in the day, because that was, of course, a thing that the South was famous for. Those red bricks that we see in all of these buildings, well, that comes from the red clay down here in the South. And so it was really neat to see how they make and put those together in the molds and then fire them, and learn all about that process. They have a farm on the grounds where they grow a lot of their own vegetables that are served in their little Middleton Place cafe there, that looks, I swear to goodness, like the Seven Dwarfs cottage was pulled out of a storybook and put right there in the middle of that farm. And it's really, really cool. It's a great place to learn a lot of local history, especially to learn about the earthquake in the 1860s, because that took out the main house of what was the Middleton Plantation house. And so where you're staying, or where you're seeing your tour now, is kind of a former guest house. It was the bachelor's house or something like that. So it's a different experience, but you get to learn more about that particular disaster, which has had a huge effect on the South and its architecture ever since. Even though it was kind of a one-off incident and there really hasn't been another major earthquake like that down here. So that was kind of interesting to see and get to know. Oh, my dog's asking for attention. That was kind of interesting to see and to get to experience firsthand. Number 2, Magnolia Plantation. This one, again, is right down the road from me, and it is a really cool visit. Now, instead of having the very pristine, well-manicured gardens of the Middleton Plantation, which is my husband's favorite, Magnolia is my favorite because they just let it go wild. It is a romantic style garden, which means while it is cultivated and manicured, it is manicured in a way to specifically allow it to appear natural. So it feels much more jungly and wild. There are a lot of alligators and egrets and cranes all over the place. So many turtles, unbelievable amounts of turtles. And it's the Spanish moss drips off from the trees, and especially in late March, early April, all of the azaleas at Magnolia Plantation open, and it looks like the whole garden is covered with pink and white lace, and it is absolutely breathtakingly beautiful. You honestly, you can't even imagine it. It is so gorgeous, and I highly recommend, if you're visiting, especially in the springtime, that you take the time to go to Magnolia Plantation. It is one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen. And if you have kiddos, it does have a petting zoo, so that's a fun way to keep them distracted, right? Now, as with any list, you know me, I can't narrow down only 10 things I like in almost any category, so I do have several honorable mentions. These honorable mentions are not honorable mentions because they're of lower quality than the 10 that I put on the top 10 list. Really, the only thing holding most of them back is the fact that these honorable mentions take less time to visit than the main events on the list. Most of my honorable mentions you could check out in half an hour to an hour, so it's not really an all-day event the way visiting a plantation or the aquarium might be. So for my honorable mentions, I have the Old Exchange and Promise Dungeon. It's one of the most haunted locations in South Carolina. George Washington stayed there during his visit to the South, and it just has a lot of incredible history. It was used as a dungeon by the British during the Revolutionary War, and you can take tours, and it's pretty incredible. So definitely worth checking out, but it does not take a very long time to do so, so I wouldn't dedicate a whole day to it. Next is Dock Street Theater. This theater was the first theater created by a city in the U.S. to be designated as a theater, and the first opera in the United States was performed here. One of the most famous actors to stay here back in its days as a hotel was Junius Brutus Booth, father to John Wilkes Booth. So it has a pretty long history. It also is said to be haunted, and it's on my tour that I give in the historic district in Charleston, so it's definitely worth checking out. If they're not running a play there at the time, they are happy to kind of show you around and give you some of the history of the place. And there's a beautiful little courtyard underneath the Dock Street Theater that is absolutely adorable as well. Again, it's an incredible visit. You learn a lot about history, but it does not take long really to check it out. So this would be something that you'd want to do in conjunction with the Old Exchange or Market Street, something that, you know, you don't want to spend a whole lot of time on, but it's definitely worth a visit. Next is Shem Creek. Shem Creek is a little bit different in that it's not kind of a historic landmark or anything like that, but Shem Creek is where a lot of the shrimp boaters come in with their shrimp boats. It's a great way to see dolphins if you're kind of longing to see one and you haven't seen one on your visit yet. It may look familiar if you're a fan of the TV show The Outer Banks. A lot of Outer Banks was shot right in Shem Creek, and so if you're a Charleston native, you'll see a lot of familiar sights on that show. It's funny to me because the show takes place in North Carolina, but a lot of it was shot here in Charleston, South Carolina, which is almost as south as you can be and still be in South Carolina, so it's kind of funny that it's kind of in the wrong state, but you know, they do that kind of thing all the time. Shem Creek on one side has a nice park where you can walk down the boardwalk and go fishing and, you know, just get a exercise and stretch your legs. On the other side of the creek, there are a couple restaurants and nightclubs, and it's just kind of a fun, more urban place to visit that's still very kind of clean and upscale. I really, really enjoy it, but again, it's not something that's going to take you all day. My last honorable mention, of course, is the Charleston Tea Plantation or Charleston Tea Gardens. I'm a huge tea drinker, huge tea fan, and so to me this was really, really exciting to see how tea is grown and processed and created. They have an incredible gift shop, but again, probably not something that's going to take more than an hour or so to visit. It's really, really fun, very, very peaceful, and it is another spot that in the early spring, the azaleas absolutely go nuts, and it is so beautiful. So definitely something worth checking out. Probably not something you want to devote your whole day to. What you do want to devote your whole day to is our number one. It is probably the thing furthest away from Charleston on my list, but it's well worth the drive, and that is the Hunting Island Beach / Boneyard. This is a really cool spot. I've put pictures of it on my Facebook before. It used to be a neighborhood until Hurricane Hugo kind of wiped out the beach line there, and the salt water killed a lot of the live oak and palm trees. These trees are now kind of bleached out by the salt and the sea and the sun, and so it does look like a whole bunch of skeleton trees. They would be very comfortable in the Nightmare Before Christmas. And this beach, because you have to walk in through about a half a mile of jungle to get to it, it's very rarely busy. I think usually when I'm there, there's one to two other families along the whole beach. And so it's very, very private and quiet. And it's an excellent spot if you're just going to spend the whole day on the beach. That's the place to do it because you've got so much freedom. Also, the most intact sand dollars I've ever found in my life, I found on that beach. There are starfish and crabs and all kinds of fun beachy things to keep your kiddos busy. And it's all just kind of left open because it used to be a neighborhood. So it's definitely one of my favorite places to visit. It is a little bit of a hike from here in Charleston. It's about an hour and a half drive, but it is absolutely incredible. Probably one of the best beaches I've ever been to just for hanging out at the beach and playing all day. If you're a surfer, this is probably not your jam though, because the waves don't get really, really big there. There's just a lot of open, private beach space that you can visit. Now, another thing I wanted to address on this episode, besides the top 10, is that since it's September now and we're cruising into fall, it is the start of spooky season. I know I'm starting a little early. Most people start their spooky season in October. I can't help it. I get too excited. It is my favorite part of the year to be running a podcast. As a kid, I thought when people referred to the holiday season that they were referring to October, November, December, because each one of those months has a major American holiday in it. So I thought your average season, like winter, spring, summer, and fall, is about 3 months long. So the holiday season is 3 months of a big holiday in each month, right in a row. Of course, now that I'm older, I know that when people use the phrase holiday season, they're referring specifically to the time surrounding Christmas. But as a kid, in my brain, somehow that's how that made sense. Oh, it's a season of holidays. And so that stacks up great for me for spooky, what I call spooky season here on the podcast. And that's because Christmas stories in Victorian times were traditionally ghost stories. So basically what's going to happen is between now and New Year's, I'm going to be telling you spooky stories that may be local stories from here in Charleston. They may just be Southern stories. They may just be something that suits the season, but I'm going to mix it up here. It is my favorite time to run a podcast because I love these spooky stories and I love kind of that whimsy and nostalgia of both Halloween and Christmas. I have an episode racked up here for Thanksgiving as well, but for the most part, I'm going to be keeping it creepy between here and New Year's, and I hope you're going to love tuning in to hear what I've got in store for you for the Halloween season and for Christmas. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and have a beautiful, beautiful weekend. Love ya.